We're going to dive into the heart of the Quran, the Sirah, the Tariq, the Hadith, Islam's five oldest textual resources, for the express purpose of proving that the President of the United States lied about the issue at the heart of America's very survival. Is the Islamic State Islamic? He says no. Do religions like Islam condone mass murder? He says no. Is the Islamic State unique among Muslims? He says yes. The evidence says no. And so we're going to cover this material in a systematic way, because there is no greater threat to the free world than Islam. It is the most deadly disease ever conceived by humankind. And it is spreading rapidly because our political leaders, our academic leaders, media spokespeople, military, justice officials are all lying on behalf of the murderers. Bukhari and Muslim's topical hadith, which are hadith or oral reports from Muhammad and his companions. In fact, the Quran itself is hadith. It's an oral report from Muhammad and his companions. Were used to amplify important Islamic themes. Therefore, Muhammad's message has never been as clear as it is in these pages. Unfortunately for humankind, unmasked, unveiled, Muhammad's message is repulsive, even terrorizing. But that's precisely what makes this review important. The Muhammad's Own Words appendix of Prophet of Doom isn't the best way to learn about Muhammad or understand the Quran. But its topical structure may be the most effective means to evaluate his religion. This format facilitates the study of important issues from various perspectives. Their relative significance can be evaluated based upon the volume of material relegated to them. So for your edification and convenience, this appendix collates nearly 3,000 quotes from the Quran, the Sirah, which is the biography of Muhammad, the oldest written Islamic resource, the Tariq, which is the history of Islam's formation, and the Hadith, all reports from Muhammad and his companions. Under subject headings like fighting, war, jihad, and murder. In contrast to the book, Prophet of Doom, this Muhammad's Own Words appendix, which I will be sharing these quotes from, ends with the Islamic creation and begins by focusing on the tools of tyranny and terror. It represents the dogma's least understood and most lethal pronouncements. I trust you'll find this endeavor as sobering as it is enlightening. Every passage in this appendix is recorded in one of Islam's five prime sources. And there are only five. The Sirah, which is the biography of Muhammad compiled by Ishaq 125 years after Muhammad's death. The Tariq, the history of Islam's formation, compiled by the foremost Quranic scholar probably of all time, Tabari. It was compiled about 200 years after Muhammad's death. The Hadith, which are all reports from Muhammad and his companions, are only two of these collections, both topically arranged, that were compiled within 200 years of Muhammad's death, one by Bukhari, the other by Muslim. And the Quran itself, which is Hadith. It is strictly oral reports from Muhammad, passed along via his companions, and so, in fact, it does not differ from the Quran. And even the Sirah and Tariq are hadith, just as is the Quran. 100% of what is known about Islam, about Muhammad, about Allah, is an oral report from this man and from those who leagued with him in the 7th century CE. All that we have is compiled in these five sources. Islam can be no different than they state it to be. Each quote fell from Muhammad's lips, no matter how it was inspired. Every recital, whether surah or hadith, was passed along to us by the same group of men and by exactly the same means, hearsay. As you will discover, the message does not differ from source to source because the author was always the same. Ishaq's Sirat Rasul Allah provides the sole account of Muhammad's life and the formation of Islam written within 200 years of the Prophet's death. It is a hadith collection comprised of oral reports from Muhammad and his companions. There is no earlier nor any more accurate source. Now, while the character, the message, the deeds portrayed within its pages are the antithesis of Yaushas and his disciples, the Sirah's chronological presentation is as indispensable to Muslims as the first four books of the so-called Christian New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, are to Christians. The religion ceases to exist. Muhammad becomes unknown without it. The Quran cannot be understood or followed without the Sirat Rasul Allah. The Tariq is the oldest, most trusted, and complete comprehensive history of Islam's formation and Muhammad's example, which is called Sunnah, the basis of Sunni Muslim. It was compiled by Tabari. His history of Tabari is formatted much like the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. It begins with Islamic creation and ends with the acts of Muhammad's companions. Tabari also composed Islam's most revered Tafsir, which is a commentary on the Quran. He was the dogma's first scholar, Islam's first scholar. His history serves to explain Allah's recital and Muhammad's Sunnah by way of his compilation of hadith. The most revered topical collections of early Islamic traditions were compiled by Bukhari and Muslim. They, like this appendix, assort hadith under important Islamic themes, such as jihad, Islamic raids, creation, fear, taxes, money, witnesses, punishment, and predestination. To confirm the validity and nature of the Islamic scriptures quoted herein, consider what Muslim scholars wrote in the preface of the Hadith and Quran. Bukhari is a collection of sayings and deeds of Prophet Muhammad, also known as the Sunnah. The reports of the Prophet's sayings and deeds are called Hadith. Bukhari lived a couple of centuries after the Prophet's death and collected his hadith. Each report was checked for compatibility with the Quran, and the veracity of the chain of reporters had to be established. The Quran is one leg of two that forms the basis of Islam. The second is the Sunnah of the Prophet. What makes the Quran different from the Sunnah is its form. The Quran is quite literally the word of Allah, whereas the Sunnah, which is comprised of hadith, was inspired by Allah, but the wording and actions are the Prophet's. Now, that's the Islamic scholar's quotations. It's found in the published version of Bukhari and Muslim's hadith that is published by the Saudi Arabian government and its clerical arm. It is also published in the most popular Quran that is published today, also by the same institution. The reality is that Islam is comprised of the Quran and the Sunnah is comprised entirely of hadith, just as they admit. The fact is there really is no difference between Quran and hadith. Here they're saying that the Quran is literally the word of Allah, which would make Allah the dumbest deity in human creation, and that the hadith was inspired by Allah. They are all from Muhammad. When quoting from the Quran and Hadith, I've elected to use a blended translation. No language transfers perfectly one word to another. 5 of my 12 translations of the Quran were combined to create the most accurate conveyance of the message possible. For clarity and readability, I have trimmed unruly word patterns and meaningless repetitions, being careful not to offer the meaning or message of any passage. Insertions within a parenthesis were added by the Arabic translators to fill in missing words or to clarify an otherwise incomprehensible text. Insertions within brackets represent my observations, and I will distinguish them as I share them with you. There are many reasons Islamic clerics are sensitive about having the Quran translated into a contemporary language. The most important are that they don't want anyone to know what it actually says or how poorly it's written. But we'll get into that in a moment. Muslims claim that Arabic was Allah's original tongue and that translations are simply paraphrases. But that would make Allah younger than man because Arabic is one of mankind's most recent dialects. Its written form didn't emerge until the 7th century. And most every important religious word, concept, and name used in the Quran is Hebrew. If Muslims were to shed their yoke of ignorance, they would discover that the real reason those who indoctrinate them, control them, suppress them, fleece them, and abuse them want them deceived is that the actual message contained in Allah's Quran is horrendous. It is more intolerant, more racist, more punitive and violent than Hitler's Mein Kampf. There are 100 vicious verses for every nice one. The book inspires infinitely more terror than peace. They would also discover that the Quran is horribly written. There are countless meaningless words, foreign words, and missing words, which is why translations differ so significantly. Everyone is guessing as to what Muhammad thought Allah was trying to say. This is why Gerd Puin, the world's leading specialist in Arabic calligraphy and Quranic paleography, studying the oldest manuscripts, speaks with disdain about the willingness of Muslims and non-Muslims alike to accept Islamic dogma. When Shattering Myths returns, we'll consider what this scholar had to say. Typically in our second hour, third hour of our program, we cover, at least at this point, we have moved into demonstrating that Paul was a false prophet, that the founder of the Christian religion, the author of half of the Christian New Testament, was a complete fraud, a false prophet, a false apostle, the wolf in sheep's clothing that Yahusha spoke about, the plague of death, according to Yahweh. But for a while, because America is now going to engage in another counterproductive war, we're going to prove that the United States leader, Barack Hussein Obama, is a liar. We're going to demonstrate that the 61% of Americans that think that the proper response to the Islamic State is to bomb them are wrong. That those who would differentiate Islam from the Islamic State couldn't be more errant. And so we're going to spend some time systematically revealing what the source materials are on the Quran so that you, and the Hadith, so that you know what Islam is comprised of. And then we're going to quote from them. Now, Gerd Puin, who is the foremost scholar on the ancient texts of the Quran, says, "The Quran claims for itself that it is mubeen, or clear. But if you just look at it, you will see that every fifth sentence or so doesn't make any sense. Many Muslims will tell you otherwise, but the fact is a fifth of the Quran is absolutely incomprehensible. This is what it caused the traditional anxiety regarding translation. If the Quran is not comprehensible, if it cannot be understood in Arabic, then it's not translatable into any language. And that's why Muslims are afraid. By reading the Quran in a language they actually understand, Muslims would find that there is no semblance of order. in the central book of Islam either. The Quran is a jumbled mess without context, chronology, or rational transitions. It is only by rearranging the Quran in the order that it was allegedly revealed and infusing it with context provided by the chronological hadith narratives that the book begins to make sense. But by doing so, it becomes obvious that the Quran was simply a reflection of Muhammad's demented character and of his misplaced ambition. The more you know, the more you will come to despise the fraud Muhammad perpetrated on his fellow Arabs, and they on humankind. To know the Quran is to reject Islam. The documented references, in Muhammad's own words, were derived from English translations of the ancient Islamic manuscripts. The Sirat Rasul Allah by Ibn Ishaq, written circa 750 CE, was edited and abridged by Ibn Hisham in 830 and translated by Alfred Gulim under the title of The Life of Muhammad in 1955 by Oxford Press. The History of Al-Tabari was written by Muhammad bin Al-Tabari between 870 and 920 CE. His work was translated and published in 1987 through 1997 by SUNY, State University of New York Press. I will be quoting from volumes 1, 2, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Al-Bukhari's hadith titled Sayyid Al-Bukhari, The True Traditions, was collected by Imam Bukhari in 850 CE. I've used the collector's original nomenclature. The following Quran translations were blended and amplified. Ahmed Ali, Pikthal, Novel by Mushin Khan, Yusuf Ali, and Shakir. This appendix is not designed to replace the chronological presentation of Muhammad and his conception of Islam that is reflected in Prophet of Doom. It is for the aid of those who have already read the book. Every quotation is presented chronologically in Prophet of Doom within the context of Muhammad's life. They are reviewed in juxtaposition to their adjacent passages. Finding the page upon which a hadith from Ishaq or Tabari is covered is thus relatively simple, since their authors observed a strict chronology. The higher the page number or volume, the later you'll find the reference in Prophet of Doom. But the Quran isn't as logical. So if you want to review its surahs within the context of chronology, place, and circumstance, as well as adjacency, you'll have to use a different index. Now, we also have provided, for those that would question these translations, five parallel Qurans, all five of the ones that I've just mentioned, where every passage is presented side by side, so you can look at how the five most revered, respected Arabic translations of the Quran read in English. And also, we have presented the POD Quran, which puts the Quran in chronological order. Welcome back to Shattering This. We have Larry, who has just called in, as well as Jaime, who's a somewhat regular caller from Medellin, Colombia. And Jaime has a question on the Shabbat program that would normally be part of our Shabbat program. That's something that will take place tomorrow at 7:30 Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. So before we begin to read what Muhammad had to say about Islamic killing, let's entertain Jaime's call. Hello, Jaime. How are you?
Hey, Shalom. Yeah, I'm doing very well here, trying to close some fuel deals and because it's tight financially down here, but I'm okay.
Good. I'm glad.
From there. The reason I was calling in relation to the Shabbat program tomorrow night is because when I've gotten on the Friday night one, and I noticed that I can't call in and ask questions or anything. It's like locked or blocked or whatever.
We typically have on that program, the vast majority of people listen to the archives. But those who don't listen to the archives, and there's several hundred, typically, that would listen to it live. They, most of them participate in the chat room, and quite often those questions will get to me. But we'll have, on an average show, probably 10 people that call in. It's just that when they call in, after the show begins, and I take the first two or three people and bring them up live from the switchboard. The problem is that if I bring up more people live, then it becomes, I don't know if you ever watch the television shows where you've got a panel of people and you've got five people trying to, it becomes just a jumble of words and becomes very difficult. So no one, we never lock anyone out. There's an unlimited number of people who can listen, call in and listen. It's just that the only way that I would be able to take a question on that show is for you to get in early in the chat room, tell me the area code that you're going to use to call in, and then I can, and if you call in early, I can take the question and bring you up live.
Okay. Well, I want to do something a little bit different because the way Yehovah works is really interesting. I received a phone call over the weekend or something like that, in the last 6-7 days, and it was this person who accidentally just dialed and got me, and she was calling in relation to trying to find a Christian ministry. So naturally, that was an open door, and I started telling her about my own, that how I've been in Christianity for 24 years, and at the end I found out that it's nothing but a pagan, satanic cult, et cetera, et cetera, and all this kind of stuff. And so, and I sort of started to give her some tidbits about the Christianity, and it just opened her eyes, and so she's like, wow. She said, I want to talk to you. I got to know more about this because she's been in Christianity 20 years. And so I sent her Marcella's book, the one in Spanish. What do you call it? Translated. Okay.
Okay.
Whatever. Okay.
Okay.
And so she's like, wow, this is mind-blowing. So she says, I got a lot of questions. And I said, well, let me tell you. I said to Janet, I'm not the one to answer them because I'm very new at this in a matter of speaking also. So I said, one can answer him as Jada, okay, and he can answer all your questions. And I said, but he doesn't speak Spanish.
That's not actually, not necessarily. Right. So Yahweh has the answer to every relevant question. And, we make our best attempt to understand what Yahweh had to say. And so all Yada's answers are is what Yahweh had to say. Question. So that's, Larry is on with us as well. That's all that Larry attempts to do as well. Yahweh was really good at answering our questions, and we just try to share with Yada's
answer. No, you don't understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say is that she has a lot of questions she wants to ask.
Okay.
I can't answer them. I've answered some, but overall I cannot. So what I wanted to do was to bring her onto the program tomorrow night, and I could translate. Well, she could talk to you direct, but unless she speaks Spanish to some degree, or I would translate. So I wanted to find out if that was okay to do.
You know, I think that rather than trying to have multiple callers like that and with a different language, I think a smarter approach would be is if you will translate two or three of her most important questions, and then email me at yada@yadaya.com. Yeah, you have my email, but yada@yadaya.com. And if you will send me her questions in English, translated into English, my Spanish is pretty rusty. I will be glad to address them, and I'll send them off to Larry, and Larry will also be happy to address them.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I'll let her know. I'll let her know that, and then we'll go from there. Okay. Well, that's the reason why I called.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So I'll go back. Shalom.
All right. Larry, what'd you think of the Obaminator speech last night?
I didn't bother to watch it. I've never understood why anybody would listen to a bald-faced liar and expect to get anything but another lie.
But the lie here is egregious. I mean, when you begin by calling the organization ISIL, saying that they are simply a terrorist organization and that is their ambition, that's their objective, is to kill people as opposed to establish Islam. And then
fundamentalist organization, so yeah, that's a lie right off the top.
He says the Islamic State is not Islamic.
Oh, really?
That's like saying that the Pope is not Catholic.
Islamic.
That's like saying that the Pope is not Catholic.
Yeah, well, I was about to the Archbishop.
The Vatican is not Roman. Yeah, I mean, Yeah, it's like saying that Paul is not the author of the Christian New Testament. I mean, come on.
I read once from a guy that's a lot smarter than me. He said, you know, bad Muslims can be good people, but good Muslims are always bad people. And a bad Muslim in Islam is akin to a bad Nazi in Hitler's Germany or a bad communist in Stalin's Russia. And that's pretty much the way it is.
That means that somebody that will pretend to be what they are, they'll pretend to be a Muslim. They'll talk about being a Muslim, but only so they're not ostracized from their community and then hunted down and killed.
Yeah, I'll tell you a true story.
Yes.
Here's a true story. As you know, I'm married to an Iranian.
Mm-hmm.
Her name's Yalda.
Yes.
Her family, when we were married, was worth about $114 million, roughly, give or take.
Roughly, 114, plus or minus a million or so.
Yeah, whatever. Today they're down to a few million. You know why?
Okay. Wow.
They're not good Muslims. And they keep getting hauled into court. And the vineyards that Yalda grew up in, that's been taken from their family. I mean, everything gets taken. If you're a bad Muslim in Islam, you are fair game.
I would guess that those vineyards that may have once been worth $100 million properly worked are now worth a tiny fraction of that. You know, when you steal,
they're not vineyards. They turned them into a state park.
Okay, yeah. So when you steal something that someone else was dutifully working, the mentality of the thief is always such that they destroy the asset. It's like the governments confiscating productive assets and nationalizing them. They always waste away.
Yeah, well, of course, their thing was, what are you doing with these grapes? Well, we sell them to people. What do they do with them? We don't know. Of course, they make wine.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So they were the bad Muslims, you know, the people out having a party. And Shiraz is known as a party city. So it's just the way it is.
Anybody that
thinks that going in and it'd be like Iraq coming over here if they were the power and bombing the hell out of us and forcing Christians to convert to Islam. How well do you think that might go over?
As well as America bombing the Islamic State is going to go over in Syria and Iraq, as well as the invasion of Iraq went over, leaving the country completely broken and enveloped in a multi-party civil war, as well as the Obaminator's mission to supply arms to the rebels in Syria has gone over, killing hundreds of thousands of people, as well as his speech to the Islamic world in Cairo went over when he inspired this Islamic reformation that is devouring humankind. That's how well it would go over. Nothing has changed. Let's share some...
That was a rhetorical question.
Of course.
The right answer.
I mean, let's share some of Muhammad's citations. These are all from the Muhammad's Own Words section of Prophet of Doom. I've introduced the material. You've read Prophet of Doom, so none of this will be surprising to you. But it's important that Americans know that the President of the United States lied. Bukhari. The Prophet said, a single endeavor of fighting in Allah's cause is better than the world and whatever is in it. So this notion that Islam is not about fighting is absurd. Ishaq, our onslaught will not be a weak, faltering affair. We shall fight as long as we live. We shall fight you until you turn to Islam, humbly seeking refuge. We will fight not caring whom we meet. We will fight whether we destroy ancient holdings or newly gotten gains. We have mutilated every opponent. We have driven them violently before us at the command of Allah and Islam. We will fight until our religion is established. We will plunder them, for they must suffer disgrace. Quran 9:88. The messenger and those who believe with him strive hard and fight with their wells and their lives and Allah's cause. Quran 9:5, fight and kill the disbelievers. Wherever you find them, take them captive, harass them, lie in wait, and ambush them. using every stratagem of war. Did the Quran 9.5 say, fight and kill the armed disbelievers who are engaged in the military and only kill those who have come after you? Or did it say, fight and kill disbelievers, non-Muslims, wherever you find them? Take them captive. Harass them. Lie in wait and ambush them.
That this was written to because there was a war on.
Well,
that's not what it said. It said take disbelievers and kill them. Basically, treat them like slaves. You know, the worst thing in this world that I can think of, can even imagine, the worst type of human being is a slave trader. I can't think of anything more.
There is something worse. A pedophile.
Slave traders are typically pedophiles.
Yeah, but if we're differentiating between badness between a slave trader and a pedophile, and recognizing that many slaves are children and are sexually abused, that's not much of a distinction. But it is true that Muhammad was a pedophile and Muhammad was a slave trader. Both of these things are true. Quran 9:111. Believers fight in Allah's cause. They slay and are slain. They kill and are killed. Quran 8:39. Fight them until all opposition ends and everyone submits to Allah. It's a never-ending war. We'll be back. It's pretty straightforward. It's Quran 8:39. And it should be noted that Muhammad never engaged in a war. No one ever fought a war against Muhammad or his companions. Muhammad was a terrorist. He inspired 75 terrorist raids during the first 10 years of the Islamic era. In every case, his armed militants plundered, raped, enslaved, and robbed their victims. In virtually every case, in fact, I would say in every single case, their victims did not have a military. They did not have an army. They didn't even have a security force. In every single case, Muhammad's victims were civilians. In every single case. So this idea that Muhammad lived at a different time and that he had to protect Muslims is absolutely nonsense. It's as big a lie as the Obamanator saying that the Islamic State is not Islamic. Quran 8:39, fight them until all opposition ends and everyone submits to Allah. That means that Muslims are ordered to declare war on all humankind and to fight, kill, until everyone surrenders to Islam and becomes a Muslim. Ishaq. Now, I'm not giving you the page numbers here because they're all available in Prophet of Doom. Go to prophetofdoom.net and you can find the references to all of these. This happens to be page 324 of Ishaq's Sirah, but you can find them in the book. Fight them so that there is no more rebellion. Rebellion means opposition to Islam. And religion, which means Islam. All of it is for Allah only. Allah must not have rivals. But yet Allah's greatest rival is Yahweh, because Allah was modeled after Satan. Quran 9:14, fight them and Allah will punish them by your hands, will lay them low and cover them with shame. He will help you over them. Yes, they're fighting with Allah at their side. Ishaq, I am fighting in Allah's service. It is piety and a good deed. In Allah's war, I do not fear as others should, for fighting is righteous, true, and good. Quran 9:29, fight those who do not believe that Muhammad was a prophet and that Allah is God until they all surrender, paying the protective tax in abject humiliation and submission. Muslims, fight in Allah's cause. Stand firm and you will prosper. Quran 8:65. O Prophet, urge the faithful to fight. If there are 20 among you with determination, they will vanquish 200. If there are 100, then they will slaughter 1,000 unbelievers. For the infidels are a people devoid of understanding.
Can I interject something here?
Yeah, I like that, Muhammad, so far. Yeah.
Well, first of all, let me preface this with Yahweh is not a religious deity. He is not. Allah is
all religion.
Totally a religious deity. Everything he lays out is an edict.
That is
so
correct.
All those words that Yada just shared are religious edicts
if you're
a Muslim.
That is
period.
Correct.
There's no way around it.
Allah is establishing a religion, and Yahweh is overtly opposed to religion. They are opposites.
Yes. Now here we go. I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. The God of your Old Testament was nothing more than, he was out killing people and he was vicious. There you go.
Let's say it was true. Yeah. How would that change any of this?
Well,
let's just say that's true. It isn't. But let's just say it's true. Why would the distraction change anything? It doesn't change any of these words. It doesn't change the fact that Allah ordered Muslims to fight and kill forever until everyone submits to Allah and Islam to slaughter them, to savage them. So even if Yahweh was as you have surmised, and that's, of course, you know it's not true, why does it matter? It doesn't change any of this. Let me speak on behalf of Yahweh. Yeah. Yahweh recognized what I have said about Islam, that it's a deadly pathogen, and that if it's not quarantined and its host exterminated, then everyone is being merciless to those who are vulnerable, because it will continue to ravage and kill. So in one place, in his home, he had the conveyors of religion destroyed. We'll be back tomorrow.